What we're going to be doing now are three workarounds, three ways to deal with the issue of having to do malacha on Shabbos and wanting to minimize the way it is done. In truth, at the start of the semester, I thought I was not going to cover this in this this go-round. I did it in the first semester. I thought I was not going to do it in the second semester. Because it's not inherently necessary for doing the medical topic, like doing the levels of illness. But the more I looked at some of the issues that came up in the course of the review, the more I realized we do need to talk about Amir La'akum, and we do need to talk about Shinui. And those are two out of the three. And once we're doing those two, so we'll do the third as well, which is the issue of Grama. So we're going to end up seeing all three. Won't quite be as at length as in the first semester, but at length enough to really get a good handle on the three topics. That's what we're going to be doing. My plan is to give a few minute break somewhere in the middle of class today. We'll see, how we're progressing, but we'll see. So our first topic is Amira La'akum. So first, I don't think I went through this when we first introduced Amir La'akum, when we were talking about taking care of patients and where you do Amir La'akum. But Amir La'akum, Amira means speech, saying, right? And Akum means?
Non-Jew?
Yeah, well, for our purposes it means non-Jew, but technically it is an acronym for Oved Kochavim U'Mazalot, or Ovedet, I suppose, Kochavim U'Mazalot, somebody who serves stars and constellations. But yeah, for our purposes, it doesn't just mean an idolater. It means someone who isn't Jewish. There are times in halacha where it just means idolater, but that's not our case here. Sometimes you will hear this phrased as amira lagoy or amira lenochri, and all of those mean the same thing, telling somebody who isn't Jewish to do something on Shabbos. So here's an issue that confuses people. And I think that it's high time that we confuse people. It's already 10:36, so let's go for it. There are two different issues that come up when you deal with Amira La'akum, and it's important to get them to separate them from each other. One is called Maisa Shabbos or Maasei Shabbat. The other is Amira La'akum. Does anybody know the difference between those two things? And I don't mean translating the words, but like what they refer to. Yeah. Nope. Although it ends up being a result of that. It's connected to that. Maisa Shabbos or Maasei Shabbat and Amira La'akum. Two different things.
These are two of the three rounds.
Sorry?
These are two.
No. This is all going to be within the Amira La'akum topic, but you need to know them both. Each of them matters. Okay. So Maisa Shabbos means I am not allowed to benefit from malacha that a non-Jew does for me on Shabbos. Whether I ask them to or not, completely irrelevant. We've talked about this before, I just haven't used the term before. But I gave the case of you're sitting in the shul library and the light is off, and a non-Jew sees that you're sitting there and walks in and turns on the light and leaves, right, for you. Even though you never told them to do anything for you, you're not allowed to benefit from it on Shabbos. That's called Maasei Shabbat, Maisa Shabbos. That's a flat rule. Clear? That's separate from Amira La'akum, which prohibits me from asking a non-Jew to do something for me on Shabbos. Two different issues. That's why I say that the issue of hinting does relate to it, because in the case where you hinted, if fundamentally he did something for you, you still have a problem. You haven't solved that problem.
So it's just a matter of asking, you're saying? What's the difference between the two definitions? Like whether you asked or
whether they just did it.
Or whether they just did it.
And what we're saying is that both are no good. You haven't solved your problem by saying, well, they just did it for me without me asking. That did not solve my problem. Yeah.
You said Maasei Shabbos is if you ask them or if you don't ask them.
Correct. It applies in both cases.
So Maasei Shabbos is like overall, and Amira La'akum is just like a subsection?
It's an interesting way to look at it. I mean, we're going to say them we're saying them separately because they come from different sources as halachic issues. But it's true that Maasei Shabbos is broader and will apply in a case of Amira La'akum. That would be correct. Or to say it differently, in the event that the non-Jew sees you and just turns on the light and you use it, you violated Maisa Shabbos. In the event that you tell the non-Jew and the non-Jew does it for you, you've now violated Maisa Shabbos and Amira La'akum. So you could frame it that way. Yeah, correct. So let's talk about the sources for this. Take a look, please, at source number one on your sheet, Mishnah and Shabbos. Nachri shehidlik es haner, a non-Jew, lights a flame. Mishtamesh la'oro Yisrael, a Jew is allowed to use the light. However, ve'im bishvil Yisrael, if he lit it on behalf of a Jew, aser, then the Jew is not allowed to use that light. Clear? And then the next case is one actually that I was asked about by somebody just last week. Somebody wanted to know about going on a cruise and getting off the boat on Shabbos, where the ship is already docked before Shabbos starts. So there's no issue for them of Tchum. They're going to stay within the kilometer or so of the boat. They're going to deal with all their halachic issues and all their halachic problems. But the question is, non-Jewish crew let the gangplank down, or whatever they call it. I don't think they still call it a gangplank, probably, only on pirate ships. I don't know. But they're going to let whatever it is down so that you can walk onto the dock and onto the shore. Are you allowed to get off the boat on Shabbos? So that's a Mishnah. The Mishnah says, Asa nochri kevesh, lered bo. If a non-Jew makes a ramp in order to descend from a boat, Yored Achra of Yisrael. So a Jew is allowed to go down after because the non-Jew did it for themselves. Vim Bishvil Yisrael, but in the event that the non-Jew set up the ramp just for the Jew, Aser, then the Jew is not allowed to go down the ramp. Clear? Got it? Yeah.
So why did we just say there's something not that Shabbos that? You just said you can't do this.
Right, and you can't, but he did it for himself, then you can benefit. The non-Jew did it because he wanted to get off the boat.
Before.
What do you mean?
What's not allowed about Matzah Shabbos?
To benefit from halacha that the non-Jew does for the Jew. If the non-Jew does it for you.
I thought for you was like Amir La'akum.
No, Amir La'akum is only where you ask them to do it. Think about
so
the words.
So like if he somehow knows that you need something without you telling him.
He sees you sitting in the dark and he says, boy, I bet he'd like to have some light on in the room. He sees that you're on the boat. He knows that no one likes being trapped on a boat for Shabbos. So he says, I think I'll put down the gangplank. Yeah. That's what we're talking
about.
That's
so subjective.
What do you mean?
He could walk off and then walk back on and then he can technically do it for himself.
Yep.
But you can use it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But don't play games, but yes. Yeah.
What if the non-Jew wants to put it down because he knows the rule and will be like, oh, I'm just going to put it down for anyone. And anyone can use it.
Right. So if he's doing it because he knows the rule, then you know that he's doing it for Jews. The question becomes, and I think I mentioned it in last class or the one before, what if he's doing it because he's paid to do it? This happened, I had this shaila many years ago. I was in a summer camp, and I noticed that Shabbos morning, the camp staff were going around the camp, campgrounds, turning on lights in various rooms that they were going to need, the shul, the kollel, whatever it was. And I thought, they're not sticking around to read. Why is that okay? And I asked the rabbi in the camp, and his answer to me was, they're not doing it because they're turning on the light so you can use it. They're doing it because their job description says, all week long, every morning, you go around and you turn on these lights, and therefore they're doing it as part of just what they do. That was his answer for it. The truth is that in the camp case is probably another heter, which we're going to get to in a little bit. So I'm going to come back to it and show that there's another reason why the camp case would be more lenient. But this is the prohibition against benefiting from it. The Gemara has a debate as to whether this is a de'oraisa. Is this a biblical issue, not benefiting from the malacha they do for you, or is it a rabbinic issue? The Rambam paskins that it is a de'rabbanan. This is a rabbinic prohibition. Because it's a rabbinic prohibition, you will have leniencies. right, in cases of need. We've talked about that already before. You know, the ability, let's say, for the chole shein bo sakana, sakana saver, cases like that, to override the Rabbanon, that's going to apply here as well. So what happens in the event that you're sitting there in that library with the light off, you see the non-Jew is walking down the hall, you hear them, and you know that they're coming into the room, and you know that they're going to turn on the light. You have an obligation to stop them. Says the Mishnah Berurah, you bet. Source number two. Im nizdamein li Yisrael shara be'esha eino Yehudi rotzeh lahadlik bishvilo olasos hamedura. If a Jew happens to see that a non-Jew is going to turn on a lamp for him, and make a bonfire for him, whatever it is, sarech limchos biyado. You have to protest. You can't just let it go and then say, oh, well, I guess he took care of it. Now, in the lamp case, you'll say, well, why wouldn't I protest? If he turns it on, I have to leave the room, so of course I'm going to protest. But there are other cases where a non-Jew might do something for you in which what's done is done, and now he has helped you. So, you know, as an example of that, you're sitting in a room and it's a little warm, and, well, no, that's actually not going to work. Never mind. Leave that case out. I need a better case. I'll think of a better case later. I don't want to use the heat and cold cases because those have justifications for having him do it because people are considered sick and all that. I don't want to go there. Bailey.
What if you're in a situation where a non-Jew turns on the light for you in a room and you're unaware that a non-Jew turned on the light for you? Like, you didn't see anything happen. Like, if it's a larger room with a lot of people, you didn't see him turn on the light, but all you know is that the light was off at one point and it turned on the second.
Right.
Like, in the case of being in, like, a shul, like, what if a janitor turned on light in a shul? Like, how would you know that it was the janitor? It wasn't, like, some kid who passed or, like...
Right. So as a general principle, suffik derabanan, if you're in doubt about a derabanan, so we go leniently. So you would not, you know, if it's reasonable to assume that it could have been a kid just as easily, then you don't have this issue. Okay. Yeah.
Is this also the rule of the non-Jews doing, like, a muktzah thing for you? Like, moving something for you?
So it depends a little bit on the specifics of the muktzah circumstance. I'll explain in a second. But if the non-Jew is only doing something that's a derabanan, so maybe you have greater room for leniency. Because now it's a derabanan of Maisa Shabbos, and all that he did was a derabanan, and if I need to benefit from that for the sake of a mitzvah or to avoid pain or something like that, then there may be room for leniency. You can make that argument for sure. The only reason why I hedge is because there are some cases in which the muktzah thing didn't help you, right? If you have the concept of buses, right? The rule is that if I put my phone down on something before Shabbos, then that item, assuming it wasn't just like accident, it dropped there or something like that, but I put it down there, like that's where my phone is going to be for Shabbos, that thing on which I put the phone is now a base for the phone and is muktzah itself all Shabbos. And even if my phone ends up off of it, someone knocks it off with a shinui or the non-Jew takes it away or whatever it is, that thing below it is still muktzah. That hasn't solved my problem. So that's why I hedge on the muktzah thing. Yeah. Yeah, say, please don't do that. Thank you very much, I don't need it. Yeah. It doesn't mean you have to say to him, like, you're a terrible person, stay away, you know. It means like a, it means, and, no, it means say, please don't do that. Yeah. Yeah, it doesn't mean, you know, pro forma protests, but he knows that you want him to turn on the light. No, that's not what we're talking about. So there are two exceptions to this. One exception we've already talked about, and that is where the non-Jew is doing it for his own sake, right? That we've already seen. But take a look at source number three, where the Shulchan Aruch brings it. B'davar deleka lemecha shema yarbe b'shvilo, where there is no concern that the non-Jew is going to do more of the malacha because he's doing it for you. Kigon, for example. Shehidlik ner la'atzmo. He lit the lamp for himself. He's not going to light a second lamp because you're there. It's only one lamp, and that's all he does. Oh, asa kevesh le'red bo, or he made the ramp to get off the boat. Shebener echad ubekevesh echad yaspik lakol. One lamp, one ramp, those rhyme, suffice for everybody. There's no fear that he's going to do extra for the sake of the Jew. So therefore, Afilu makiro mutter. Even if he knows him. So the non-Jew is aware that you are benefiting from it. Nonetheless, as long as he's doing it for his own benefit, you're allowed to benefit from it.
I'm confused about the second exception.
Sorry?
The second exception.
There's only one exception. We've only seen one. The exception is where the non-Jew does it for himself. All we're adding here that we haven't already said is that if there were a concern that he's going to do more for you than what he does for himself, then we would have a problem. But otherwise not. So in other words, let's say that the malacha he's going to do for you is one that allows for doing more. I'm trying to think what that might be. What sort of malacha would it be that the non-Jew might actually add to in order to benefit you? Oh, okay. Yeah. So that's a good example. Thank you. He's squeezing orange juice. So he's doing it for himself. He's only squeezing a certain amount. He's squeezing extra now on your behalf. Now you have a problem. The fact is that that's not something where he would just do a certain amount and it's done no matter how many people. So therefore you can't say, well, he's doing it for himself, really. It doesn't work that way because he's going to add in order to make more juice for you. That's a good example. So that's your first exception, though, where he's doing it for himself. The other exception, and this is the one that takes me back to the camp case, is what about where you already had some of the benefit without the action that the non-Jew did? And what this means is, and we'll see a source on it in a second, but I'll explain it outside. What this means is where you have where a non-Jew comes to turn on a light in a room, but there's already some light in the room. You could really see in the room. It's just not as good as when the light's on because it's on in this room. So there's, you know, daylight from outside, or there's light from the hallway, or something like that. If you already have some benefit without the non-Jew's malacha, then you can benefit from the non-Jew's malacha as well. And that's what I was thinking about in the summer camp case, because it's not like they go around in the dark turning on the light in all these buildings. There's already some light coming in from outside when they go around, and maybe that's another reason to be lenient in the case of the summer camp. If you take a look at the Shulchan Aruch in source number 4, it says it explicitly. Im yesh ner bebeis Yisrael, if there is a lamp in a Jew's home, uva enu Yehudi, and along comes the non-Jew, behilik ner acher, and he lights another lamp, mutter lishtamesh la'oro ba'od ner rishon dolek, you're allowed to use the light that the non-Jew lights as long as the first lamp is still lit.
Even if it's for you and not for the non-Jew?
Yes, that's what he's saying. That's what the Shulchan Aruch is bringing here, and that's what we say.
That's the same thing as the summer camp thing, where like it doesn't really have much of an impact, right?
Yeah, that's the idea. Now, it's important that we specify so long as the original source of light remains, right? Because what if, let's say sunset is, 5:30, and they turn on this is a Shabbos case, so. Okay, Shabbos is still continuing after sunset for some period of time, so this is still an issue. So they turn on the light at 5 o'clock. 5 to 5:30, you still have light coming in from outside. 5:30 hits, you no longer have the light coming in from outside. I'm hedging a little bit, because once you're already past sunset, maybe it's only a derabanan, and then there are things you could say, but yeah.
It's already there.
Right, but we said so long as the original light remains.
So your light goes off, you're required to leave.
Correct. That's what the Shulchan Aruch said. Ba'od ner rishon dolek. Right, as long as the first light is still there.
Can you tell?
No, you should not tell him to turn it off. You should just leave the room. Yeah. Yeah, don't tell him to turn it off. That's a bad idea. I'm going to do that. Yeah.
So, in shul, if the lights turn off, but there's light coming in, then they can turn it on for you?
Yeah. That would seem to be the implication of this, correct? So this is all the Maisa Shabbos discussion. You did not tell the non-Jew to do anything, and yet there's still an issue. Separate from that is the problem of Amira La'akum, telling a non-Jew to do things for you on Shabbos. So what's wrong with telling a non-Jew to do malacha for me on Shabbos? Besides the fact that everybody knows that we're not supposed to do it. But like, what's the rationale? Anybody know? We've got four options. You can just guess and probably hit one of the four. Yeah, Rebecca. Right, so that's true in terms of making it worse to benefit from it, but it doesn't explain why there will be a separate isser against telling him. Daniela.
Because a shaliach is like going to get this. You're doing a shaliach, you're still doing it.
So one argument which we're going to see that takes one off the board is shaliach. That's one consideration. Maybe the non-Jew is like your proxy, your agent.
Ali. Is that the same thing as saying he's like an extension of you?
That's sort of like saying he's an extension of you. Yes, that is sort of like saying he's an extension of you. Yeah, we'll basically view that as the same. Bailey.
The idea that they could take something wrong away from it, like the non-Jew could learn, like, oh, it's okay to do this for a Jew on Shabbos, and they could lead them to do more malacha and do more, like stray farther away and never have a chance to do any mitzvah.
Right. So it's an interesting argument, but I don't. Yeah. There's something similar to that we'll see in the Rambam. That will be argument number four, but not quite that. Right.
Maybe someone who see this from far away will realize that it's a non-Jew and think that it's okay to have it.
So that's closer to number four, closer to what the Rambam is going to say. Okay. Let's see. Let's see what our issues are. There are four different suggestions that we are going to bring. The first is brought by the Smag, Sefer Mitzvos Gedolos, or Sefer Mitzvos Gadol. I think it's Mitzvos Gadol. Building off of a medrash found in the Mechilta on Sefer Shmos, both of which are quoted in Rabbi Yosef Karo's Beis Yosef, which is what I'm bringing here, in source number 5. Tanya b'Mechilta. Okay, he quotes for you a medrash on Parshas Bo. The Torah says, Kol melacha lo ye'aseh vohem. This is talking about Yom Tov in context. No melacha may be done on them. So what the Mechilta is picking up on is the weird language. I think in a previous class, I talked about active voice versus passive voice. I don't remember how it came up. Did we talk about that at all? Where did I do that? It was in some shir. I don't know. Okay, fine. But we know what the difference is between active voice and passive voice, right? Passive voice is what you're never supposed to use in your writing, if you can avoid it at all. Sometimes you have to, but generally speaking, we avoid it. Active voice is a lot more clear, right? Look at the language here in the pasuk. Kol malacha lo ye'aseh bohem. All malacha shall not be done on those days, on Yom Tov. The Torah should have said, Kol malacha lo sa'asu. You shall not do any malacha on that day. That's active voice. You shall not do any malacha. Why does the Torah switch to say, all malacha shall not be done on that day? You see the difference? Why did the Torah do that? Says the Mechilta, lo sa'ase ata, you shall not do malacha. V'lo yaseh chavercha, your friend shall not do malacha either. And by the way, it applies even to people who are not your friends. Imagine that there's a world in which there's someone who's not your friend. They're also in this. The word chaver should not be taken as a social commentary. And v'lo yaseh hagoy malachtecha, and a non-Jew shall not do your malacha either. Since it says malacha shall not be done, that means malacha shall not be done. I don't care who the one is who's doing it. Malacha shall not be done on your behalf on Shabbos. Mashma mikan, this implies, Sha'aser liYisrael lahaniach lagoy lasos malachto. A Jew is not allowed to permit a non-Jew to do malacha for him. This goes back to our Maisa Shabbos point, right? Bein b'yom tov, bein b'shabbos de'oraisa. So the Smag, quoted in the Beis Yosef, says, this indicates that a non-Jew may not do a Jew's malacha on a de'oraisa level. This is from a pasuk. Whether Shabbos or Yom Tov, he says this includes Shabbos. Avalim Masar Lo HaYisrael May Erev Shabbos. If a Jew gave the non-Jew the malacha to do before Shabbos, mutter, that would be okay. Ubavad Shiyeh Beveso Shal Goy, but it has to be in the non-Jew's house. That's a separate consideration. That's a Maris Ayin issue. That's an issue of, if the non-Jew is doing malacha in your home on Shabbos, people are going to assume that's at your instruction, and that's going to be a problem. But that's a separate issue. Don't get confused with Maris Ayin. This has nothing to do with Maris Ayin. This is a statement of non-Jews may not do malacha on your behalf on Shabbos. That's the statement. Now, the sharp-eyed will realize this is not about Amir Lakum at all. This has nothing to do with you telling him. This is really Maisa Shabbos, fundamentally. This is really Maisa Shabbos, much broader than Amir Lakum. But it's one source that is brought, and according to this, it's a de'oraisa. Right? According to this, it's biblical. We said that we paskin Maisa Shabbos is a derabbanan. We're going to paskin Amir la'akum is a derabbanan also. But according to this source, it's actually biblical. That's scary. Sarah?
Is the last one saying that if you give instructions to a non-Jew before Shabbos,
that's
allowed?
So we're going to get to that. When we talk about exceptions to Amir la'akum, we're going to discuss what about if you tell him before Shabbos. The answer is maybe. A very firm maybe. The source does seem to say if you told him before Shabbos, you're fine. That is what it sounds like. We're gonna come back to that, but that is what it sounds like. I think that's a fair read. So this is your first approach. Are we clear on the first approach? Everybody's good? Yes.
Wait,
Shulchan Aruch has not weighed in. This is the Beis Yosef.
Oh,
Beis Yosef is Rabbi Yosef Kara. But in his Beis Yosef commentary to the tour, he says things that aren't necessarily what he ends up with in his Shulchan Aruch. So that's source number 5, and that's one source for it. Rashi brings two other ideas, which are very different from each other. His first idea that he brings is in source number 6. The Gemara there asks, they're talking about a Jew who gets stuck outside of town when Shabbos starts. He was traveling, and Shabbos hit, and now he has a problem because he has stuff to carry and he can't carry. So what does he do? So the Gemara there talks about the possibility that he gives stuff to a non-Jew, and the non-Jew will carry it for him. Says the Gemara, "My taima shari leila meisav lanachri." The Gemara asks, why did the Chachamim allow you to give the non-Jew the wallet? Why isn't that an Amira la'akum problem? That's the Gemara's question. And Rashi explains why Amir al-Akum would be a problem. Vaharehu shlucho, Lisa enu b'shabbos. This was Daniela's answer, I think. He is your shaliach. He is your proxy. He is your agent. He's acting on your behalf. Rashi seems to say the problem is shlichus. The problem is that he is acting as your proxy.
So this is permitted or
it's not? So the wallet case may be allowed for reasons we have to talk about, which we're not going to actually, because it's not going to be directly relevant. But Rashi here is explaining why it's a question. And the reason it's a question, he says, is because you can't have a non-Jew be your shaliach to do malacha on Shabbos. Got it?
It's another reason why a mir lacha is not allowed.
Correct. Then you have a third approach. I'm deliberately not writing this on the board, not in order to be annoying, but because I find when I write stuff on the board, people take pictures of what's on the board, but they don't necessarily absorb it. So that's why I'm doing it this way instead. There was going to be a hand, I thought I saw. No? Okay. Third issue, also brought by Rashi, and this may be the most important out of the four. So when I say that, right, remember this one. Rashi in Maseches Avodah Zarah says, "Al haShabbos lo nitzdavu bnei Noach." Non-Jews have no mitzvah of Shabbos. There are mitzvahs that apply to non-Jews. Shabbos is not one of them. Umasha asur li Yisrael lomar la obe kochavim asei li kach. The fact that a Jew is not allowed to say to a non-Jew, do X on my behalf, zehu mishum, that's because of a pasuk, which I think we discussed briefly in the very first class this semester. Mishum mimtso cheftzecha v'daber davar. Yeshaya tells the Jews to be careful with their Shabbos observance. Right, this is the Haftorah on the morning of Yom Kippur. He says, you have to be careful, mimitso cheftzecha, not to pursue your needs, v'daber davar, and not to talk about matters. What does that mean? Not to talk about your needs, meaning your weekday needs, as opposed to Shabbos things. You're not supposed to be talking about weekday activities, from which we understand dibur asur, that speech about such things is prohibited. What we understand from v'daber davar is that a Jew is not allowed on Shabbos to talk about doing malacha, period. There should have been a drop at the end of that sentence to signify so pasuk. But yeah, yes.
This is separate from Hachana. Is it like you're talking about
completely it? Separate from Hachana because it's about that day also.
Oh,
yeah. So I would not be allowed, separate from the whole issue of Amir La'akum, I should not on Shabbos say, the other day I was driving and I turned on the radio and I, like, no, I'm not supposed to do that on Shabbos. That's what Yeshaya is saying, don't do. Don't talk about malacha. And the application with a non-Jew is, I can't say to them, turn on the light, because I'm not supposed to talk about turning on the light. It actually doesn't have to do with telling a non-Jew per se. It has to do with the speech that I'm using on Shabbos, which is inappropriate. You follow? Yes. Yeah.
Exception?
Yeah.
I thought that, or actually I'm not sure, but...
You're correct. I think you're correct, but go ahead.
But isn't, like, a shaliach, if you consider an extension, you should the shaliach also be obligated in that mitzvah? Like,
oh. Well, he's only your shaliach for one narrow point. He's your shaliach to do X. He's not your shaliach for everything. He's not your twin now. He doesn't gain your mitzvos as a result of being your shaliach. I thought you were going to point out there is actually a large space to argue that there's no such thing as shlichus for a non-Jew. That shlichus actually is a thing between Jews, not Jews and non-Jews. So that's a reason to argue that none of that applies. But right. So that's a good question in its own right, which I'm not going to explore. The Kilas Yaakov, the Stipler Rebbe, says both of Rashi's points will apply. They're not mutually exclusive. The idea of Shaliach and the idea of Adaber Daber. And this goes back to the question of what if you tell him before Shabbos. He says, before Shabbos would be a problem because I'm making him my Shaliach to do something on Shabbos. If I tell him on Shabbos to do it, then it's a problem of Adaber Daber. I'm speaking on Shabbos. So that's a problem. So those are my second and third concerns. Second concern is you're making him a shaliach. Third concern is you're speaking inappropriately. But here's a really important leniency, which we're going to revisit. But because I see some people who are bored that I keep repeating it, I want to explain why I keep repeating it. What if I ask a non-Jew to do something for me on Shabbos, but I never use the words describing malacha? Right? What if I say to them, you know it's cold in here, or you know it's dark in here? I didn't use any words whatsoever. What if I develop a code? What if the non-Jew and I sit down on a Tuesday, and I say to him, when I say to you the wall is painted blue, that means I want you to turn on the light. I can't use the word painted. Fine. The wall is blue. Once I say that, he knows. I never used any speech involving malacha. Is that okay?
You might be still doing
but,
it. Like,
but I didn't use... If my problem is v'daber daver, I didn't violate v'daber daver. Yeah.
He might still be doing it for you because you said it's cold, so he'll be like, okay, I'll turn on the heat for you.
So that's a Maisa Shabbos concern. But I will have avoided the v'daber daver issue. We're going to come back to this. This is an important point. Don't don't forget this point. But first we have to do the fourth and last approach, which two of you said things that were similar to this. This is the Rambam in source number 8. The Rambam says, V'davar ze asur midivrei sofrim. He says, asking a non-Jew to do malacha for you on Shabbos is rabbinically prohibited. Kidei shelo tiyeh Shabbos kala be'einehen v'yavo'u la'asos be'atzman. We are concerned that Shabbos will become light in their eyes, meaning the eyes of Jews, and therefore we will come to do malacha ourselves. Once I already know I can ask a non-Jew to do this, I'm going to start taking this less seriously. And the concern is I might end up violating Shabbos myself. So that's my fourth consideration. Yes, Bailey?
I'm just confused about the fourth one.
Yeah. The concern is simple. I don't know if it's so simple. The concern is that I will come to take things lightly in the event that, let's imagine the following case. I have a television and I ask the non-Jew to turn it on Shabbos, and that's 100% fine. There's no issue of Amir al-Akum, let's pretend, right? They leave aside whether you should watch it if it's on Shabbos and the Chol or Shabbaton or whatever else. But the fact of the matter is that once I get used to telling people to turn on a TV on Shabbos, will I really be sensitive to not turning it on myself? That's the concern. You know, to use a case that may be a little more plausible, if I get used to asking a housekeeper or helper in the house to wash the dishes with hot water on Shabbos, so I'm already going to be less sensitive to the issue and potentially do it myself. Ray?
Do you mind just going through and specifying what the four things were? I got a little bit lost.
Yeah, I just want to make sure number 4 is clear, and then I'm going to review the list. Is
number 4 Rambam?
Yes.
Do you say the important
leniencies? We're going to get to leniencies. First, we tell you why these things are bad, and then we tell you why these things are okay.
Got it.
So, our list of 4. Number 1, it's actually a de'oraisa. Malacha shall not be done on your behalf by a non-Jew. And it's really not about speech. It's about malacha being done for you. Number 2, the issue is that he is your shaliach, he is your agent. Number 3, the issue is v'daber davar, speech. You're not supposed to speak about malacha. And number 4, the concern is you start to take Shabbos less seriously, at least regarding this particular malacha. Last point, or next to last point that I'm going to make before we give people a break. Remember we had this discussion last time and the time before that about whether it's better to do Amir al-Akum, right, to tell a non-Jew to do malacha for you on Shabbos, or to violate a derabbanan with a shinoi, right, when it comes to helping Cholash Embo Sakana. So one of the points that's raised on this issue is, well, it depends why Amir al-Akum is not allowed. If Amir al-Akum is really a de'oraisa, well, then much better to do the Darabanan with a shinoi. Even better to do a Darabanan, period, right? If the issue is, on the other hand, in order to make sure that you're going to take Shabbos seriously overall, that's not anchored in any malacha. It's its own independent consideration, and therefore will be more lenient. So which thing you say, which factor you say, is going to matter. Last sentence, and then we'll take a 5-minute break so that people can refresh a little bit. And that is, the medical circumstances where we said you're allowed to do Amir al-Akum, meaning Chol HaShem Bo Sakana, right, Sakana Sever, or, for that matter, where we said you're allowed to do Amir al-Akum for a Dirabanan, right? When you're seeing the Mixas Choli case, you're allowed to Amir al-Akum for the Dirabanan, for Mixas Choli. So that permits direct Amira. You can tell the non-Jew, you don't need to do any hinting, you don't need to, like, you can, that means you're allowed to tell them straight to do whatever it is. Clear? And you can benefit from it. Maisa Shabbos is not an issue. Clear? Good? Okay, so we're going to pause here. We'll give people a full 5 minutes. I'm feeling benevolent. And then we'll reconvene to continue the topic. All right. So we understand that there are four reasons why Amira La'akum is a potential problem, or there are four arguments for it being a problem. We did say that Amira La'akum and Maisa Shabbos are overridden for particular levels of health needs. But how could somebody mitigate Amira La'akum, either because Shabbos is Dechuya, and therefore we want to minimize where we can, right, like in advance, what we're doing, what we're doing on Shabbos, or because maybe if I can reduce the severity, I'll be allowed to do it even for a lesser degree of illness. So I'm not allowed to do Amira La'akum for a De'oraisa on behalf of somebody who is, suffering from Mixas Choli, but potentially I'd be able to do it in a reduced way. Clear? You understand what I'm saying? No?
No, they also step in late, so that's on me.
Okay. So what we're saying is that you want to know how to reduce the severity of Amira La'akum in order to be able to do it in cases where regular Amira La'akum is not allowed, like a case of Mixas Choli, where you can only do it for a Derabanan, you can't do it for a De'oraisa. So here's what doesn't work, before we get into what does work. Number one, one of the all-time favorite methods, gesturing, pointing, right? That doesn't work. So in other words, the non-Jew comes into the room, and you point to the light switch, and you say, well, that's not Amira La'akum, I didn't say a word, right? I didn't violate V'daver Davar, because I didn't say turn on the light. So take a look at source number 9, Shmir Shabbos Kelchasa. Asur lirmoz lo b'Shabbos u'b'yom tov b'lashon tzivui she'ya'asena. You're not allowed to hint to somebody on Shabbos or Yom Tov using an expression of instruction to do whatever it is. Bein sheharemez hu al yedei dibur, whether that instruction is verbal, ubein shehu al yedei tnuot, or via gestures. Instructions of turn on the light, so you point and you go like that, right? Like that, for those who are listening on the audio. That doesn't work. Clear? That's an instruction. Also, speech is not only verbal. That's one thing that does not work. Another is a hint which is too blatant, which is too explicit. So take a look at source number 10, Shmir Shabbos Kehilchasa. Asur lomar lenochri b'Shabbos, ta'asei imi tova, ein day or b'cheder. You're not able to say to the non-Jew on Shabbos, do me a favor, there isn't enough light in the room. You didn't use the verb. No. Kolomar remez belashon sivui. It's a hint using the expression of instruction. That's really, I think, the issue, is that it's not just that it's blatant, but it's blatant instruction. So we don't want you giving instructions, even if you manage to do it, without saying, turn on the light. Yeah. Ooh, then you have a problem. They shouldn't ask you questions. Yeah, you should avoid that situation. You could say, I didn't say anything. That's awkward. Yeah. You have to. I don't think you can say yes. I think you find something else to say. I think you bury your head in the sand. It's just like, you have to indicate to them that I'm not instructing you to do it in some sense. I think. I think what you could say. There we go. I think that what you would be able to say would be something along the lines of, Jewish law says I'm not allowed to ask you to do things for me on Shabbos. As a statement. I think that's a fair thing. I mean. The problem with it is going to leave them very perplexed because they have no comprehension of what that means. Like, if you were to say to any sane person who had no familiarity with Judaism, but they had their own religion, whatever it is, Judaism says, I'm not allowed to tell you. Other religions tend to be very focused on spirit of the law. We are also to a certain extent, but they're very focused on spirit of the law, and therefore they're going to assume that that means I can't turn on the light for you. Right? That's what they're going to walk away with. Which, is life. Yes, Rebecca.
Can you do something that's not instruction or blatant? Like, can you just be sitting in, like, on a couch reading a book or whatever and go like this, and then the non-Jew takes this as, oh, she must be hot, like, let's turn on the AC?
So as long as there isn't an instruction element, I think that you're fine.
Even if you're doing it so that doctor will see it?
Yes.
Assume.
Yes. I think that's still fine. But here's what does work. Three things that do work. Okay, Daniela, we wanted to know the things that you can do.
Thank you.
Sorry?
There were three, I only caught two.
No, there were only two.
Okay.
There were two things you can't do. There are three things that you may do. Number one, hinting before Shabbos, even if you mention the malacha. But it's still a hint. So to explain what that means, if you take a look at source number 11 from the Shulchan Aruch. Mutter lomar lo achar ha-Shabbos. You're allowed to say to the non-Jew after Shabbos, lama lo asisa davar ploni b'Shabbos she'avar. Why didn't you do X last Shabbos? Right? Meaning, it's Saturday night, and you say to him, you know, earlier today, why didn't you turn on the light? Even though, as a result, he's going to understand that you want him to do it the following week. That would be okay. Even though you're mentioning the malacha. Here's another thing that's okay. Brought in the Mishnah Berurah in source number 12. Hinting on Shabbos without instructing and without mentioning the malacha. Kisha Omer number 12. Kisha Omer Haramiz Aleinu Yehudi Shalom Balashon Tzivui. You say it to the non-Jew, not with an instruction. Kigon Shaomer, you say Haner Eino Meir Yafe. Yeah, I'm just observing. That candle isn't really burning well. That lamp isn't burning well, right? And he's going to understand. He better adjust the lamp. Oh, Eino Yachol Likros Lor Haner Hazeh Sheyesh Bo Pecham. I can't really read by that lamp. There's too much charcoal on the wick. Vishomeya ha'eno Yehudi umetakno, and the non-Jew hears it and fixes it. Shari, that's okay. De'ein ze bichlal amira, that's not called instructing him to do it on Shabbos. Yes. Right. So I think what you will still need is that he's going to benefit from it himself in some way. Correct. That's why I'm saying he has to also benefit. You require two things, right? We require that. I'm going to make a note of myself because I really should have clarified that in the first place. We have to solve two problems. Problem number one is we need to get him to do X without telling him to do so. The other problem is he also has to benefit from it himself. Without, you know, just, you know, he has to benefit from it himself. He has to be doing it, you know, for his own purposes. So if I tell him that he's sitting in the room, right? But he's not in particular adjusting the light. He doesn't feel any need to adjust the light. But I say to him, you know, there's a lot of charcoal on that. This light isn't really shining so well, right? He then adjusts it and goes on reading. So he has, I mean, there is probably not a Maisa Shabbos problem anyway because there is some light in the room. He's just adding to the light. So you've avoided that anyway. But yeah, you need to solve both.
So even if he didn't immediately think, oh, I should change this, like I'm struggling to read, even though it's technically benefiting the Jewish person because it was really meant for the Jewish person, as long as he's also benefiting from it.
Correct.
Like if he left the room after doing it, that would be a problem. But if he stays and reads too, then it's okay.
Correct.
Okay,
exactly right. Go back to the case that I gave you last time. I think it was last time. The original Shabbos Goy phenomenon where the non-Jew comes over and is going to have a drink and he turns on the stove or he turns up the flame because he wants to warm up the room because he's sitting there and drinking. So Maisa Shabbos is solved because he's benefiting. Amir La'akum is solved because you didn't tell him to do it. There was a hand on this side of the room. Natalie.
Yeah, I still feel like source 11 contradicts Maisa Shabbos, like, because he's telling him a week before. How does he know that that isn't
Right, but it would have to be a case where he gains benefit. You're right, there's nothing explicit in here about Maisa Shabbos. That is true. But we know from elsewhere in Shulchan Aruch that you have to solve that problem also.
So, like, by, you would only be able to see this if you know somebody also gaining benefit?
Correct. Mm-hmm. Or he's going to go ahead and do it and you'll just be stuck. You're not going to be able to benefit from it. Yeah. Thank you for the reassurance. Yeah, 1% Yeah.
Where they're like paid to do things for you, and like their job is to look around and see if there are things that need to be done for you specifically. Would you count that as like he's getting paid for it, so it's okay, or would you count that as his whole job is to do things for you and look around?
So the argument of that camp rabbi is that it's fine, right?
In the same. Job is specifically to do things for you.
Yeah. Yeah, but that wasn't his justification. His justification was, this is what he gets paid to do. And it isn't, I think it may also involve, for separate reasons, the fact that he does it every day of the week. It's not just on Saturday mornings, I want you to go ahead and do this, but it's a daily job. If you had a Shabbos butler, right, that you don't have.
I don't have either of them.
Okay. So, hinting before Shabbos, like, why didn't you do this last Shabbos? Hinting on Shabbos without mentioning the particular malacha. And then the last one. And the last one, when we did this first semester, really confused people. But we're going to get it this time. And if I remember, for those who were here last semester, which one really confused people? Amira da Amira. Yeah, there we go. She's got a headache already. Amira da Amira means speaking to a non-Jew who will speak to a non-Jew to get them to do something on Shabbos. In other words, the person to whom you are speaking is not going to be the one to do the malacha. And there's a basic machlokas as to whether this makes things better or not. And the Mishnah Berurah says you could rely on those who are lenient in a case of great need. And this comes up all the time. This is a very practical heter. Of all the heter, well, not all of them are practical, but this one is one that comes up a lot. Imagine the following case. Somebody is in the hospital on Friday, and they're in the ER, and they don't finish up on Friday, and now Shabbos starts, and they're going to be stuck in the hospital all through Shabbos, just waiting till Shabbos is over. They don't have Shabbos food. They don't have whatever, right? So they want to be able to get home, but they're not within walking distance. So they want to ask somebody to get them an Uber, right? But, you know, that's a problem. That's an Amir La'akum issue. How are you going to, you know, circumvent that? So there are a few things that can be done in such a circumstance, but one way to make things better is you say to the nurse at the desk, could you please ask somebody, you know, I see you're busy. I can't ask you to be the one to do this, but can you get somebody else to get me an Uber? I'm not allowed to use my phone or whatever it is, right? Or, alternatively, old school, you call a taxi company, right? How you got to the taxi company is a good question, but you call the taxi company, they have a dispatcher. The dispatcher tells whoever the non-Jewish driver is to come pick you up. Do you follow what I'm saying? The point is, you're not instructing the person who's going to do the malacha. You are instructing somebody else who's not Jewish, who will in turn get somebody else who isn't Jewish to do the malacha on your behalf. That's Amira da Amira.
So that's allowed but not preferable?
So it's a machlokas as to whether this is in fact okay, but this, according to one view, is not under the Isser, it's not under the prohibition of Amir al-Hakum. That's the idea. Take a look at number 13, the Mishnah Berurah. He says, Vida, you should know, Dema dekaimalan Amir al-Einu Yehudi Shavushu. When we say that telling a non-Jew to do something for you on Shabbos is prohibited rabbinically, Afilum Omer Le'enu Yehudi Shiyomer Le'enu Yehudi Acher. He says that applies even if you tell the non-Jew to tell a non-Jew. However, va'ayim b'sefer hachayim, see the book Sefer Hachayim, good name for a book, shekasav d'memekom hef sed gadol yesh lismoch al hamekilin, he said in a case of great loss where you have a real problem, you could rely on those who are lenient to say, no, amira da amira is actually not a problem on Shabbos. Clear? That's the idea. So we didn't bring here. I mean, we brought the Sefer HaChaim, who says you can rely on it. The view is Rav Yair Bachrach, Chavos Yoyer. That's the one who permits it. Yeah. So, in other words, you go to the elevator, and somebody there is also waiting for the elevator. Or not, though, they're not waiting for the elevator. Right? Okay. If they're pushing the button for themselves, then you're fine.
No, but I'm saying somebody who actually works in the hotel.
Yeah.
Like, he's informed that there are people that are staying at the hotel or for Shabbos that are not.
Oh, I see what you're asking. So, I'm staying in a hotel for Shabbos, and the guy at the desk in the lobby knows when I see people, you know, dressed up all fancy on Saturday, I better go over to the elevator and push the button so that they'll be able to go up. Right? That's what you're asking.
Yeah.
So I think you do have justification there. In terms of Amir La'akum, the conversation was had before Shabbos.
Right.
So you solved Amir La'akum. In terms of Maisa Shabbos benefiting from what he does, you have that argument that the camp rabbi gave that it's really him doing it for himself. It is not his job per se to push elevator buttons, but it is his job to keep customers happy. In the event that customers were to complain to the manager of the hotel after Shabbos, you know, this guy just saw us standing there and didn't come over to push the button, he would have a problem. So he's doing it because he wants to save his job. So hinting before Shabbos would be appropriate, yes. I believe that's correct. Saying it explicitly would be a problem. That's my understanding. Is that saying it explicitly. I'm hedging a little bit because I do remember sources that seem to be okay with it. That's what's bothering me. I want to look it up and recheck it, but the what we saw today already indicates that no, you have to hint. I'm bothered because I seem to remember seeing something that would allow for the speech before Shabbos. That's why I'm hedging a little bit. Okay. So are we clear? Yeah, Becca.
In that case, would I mean if the non-Jew said like if the non-Jew saw you dressed fancy and went to the elevator and was like, do you need a whatever, like you wouldn't be able to say anything.
Correct.
But what if he said something? Are you going up or down? Would you be allowed to answer?
That's interesting. The non-Jew asks you, are you going up or down? So
yes, you know you're going to press it, but also like not.
So the answer that you're giving him is not telling him the verb.
No.
So you didn't violate B'dabar Dabar. He already understood that this is a need. Without you giving instruction, he's asking you a factual question. At the same time, you are going to cause him to do this for you.
I feel like it's clear instruction. Like we said,
it's like clear, unclear instruction, that's why.
Like you said, you can't say, do me a favor, it's really cold in here.
Yeah.
I feel like this is kind of like that.
Except you didn't use a term of instruction. Do me a favor is an instruction.
Right.
Here, you didn't instruct.
This is like more of an instruction than just saying it's cold.
I want to think about that. I don't know. Yes?
In a similar situation, like if you're both going up, so he wouldn't be doing anything more, like pressing a down arrow, you're both going up, but you're on a different floor than you, so he'd be pressing another button. Like
so, sorry, you're in the lobby.
Yeah, you're both going up.
Yeah.
If you see elevators going up, it says that, and you and he's like, oh, are you what floor are you on? He's gonna press your button for you. You're both already going up.
Right.
Right. That's so, yeah, exactly.
Right. So there, I don't think you're okay telling him. I think you
yeah,
say
you should just get off at his floor.
Right. I mean, the problem is if he hasn't pushed any buttons yet. Like if you push 7, see, oh, actually I'm on 7 also. And then you just quietly make your way towards the staircase on 7 to get to your floor. You know what? I was actually on 6. Whatever that is. I don't think I'd be okay with telling him something that's going to actually cause him to press a new button. That would seem to be an issue. Yeah.
My room is on this floor, which is not an instruction.
Yeah, well, that's why I'm not sure. That's why I'm hesitating. Shirley, you were gonna say?
Is there not an issue of getting in
the house? Right. So I wasn't discussing at all, and you're right for pointing it out. The question of Shabbos elevators, as a general rule. This none of my answers to this were intended to be weighing in on the question of appropriateness of a Shabbos elevator. It's a little bit of a more complex issue. The answer is that it can be fine, but it will depend on whether you're going up versus whether you're going down. It is, people don't realize this, but it's worse to be going down in an elevator on Shabbos than to be going up in an elevator on Shabbos. That's what people think, but it's not. An elevator, period. I'm not talking about Shabbos elevators. I mean, it's worse to be going down in an elevator on Shabbos than to be going up. The reason is because when you go up in the elevator, the concern is simply that it is increasing its effort in order to bring you upward, but the current is already running. The circuits are already complete. It's just a matter of increasing the current, which many poskim say is fine on Shabbos. Whereas if you're going down, it's actually not doing anything to take the elevator down. It's using your weight to go down. And the problem with that is, as the elevator goes down, indicators are changing and different things are happening. In certain elevators, they will recapture the electricity from descending to use it to turn on lights on the floors as it goes past them. All as a function of that. And the question is, are you liable for what happens simply because of your mere presence in a space? You didn't do anything. So that's why this is up to debate, but that's why down would actually be worse than up. Golly.
It happens in Stern on Shabbos when, like, I've stayed in before, and I don't even say anything, but I walk inside the dorm building, and the security guard sees me, and she just presses the button for me for the elevator.
So whatever system they've set up here was done halachically in consultation with Rabbanim. I'm not raising any doubts or questions regarding that. Whatever they're doing, they know what they're doing. That would be my answer regarding that. Bailey.
What about if you're using, you said that it's worse to go down an elevator than go up in an elevator.
Yeah, it's already 11:41, so people can go if they have to go, but I'll.
What if you're in a shop elevator and you're